Well, greetings everyone and welcome to the Law Hour and Editorial Review. The Law Hour is sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. Now, the Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. I'm your narrator, George Gordon. The Law Hour and Editorial Review is heard nationally and internationally 7 days a week here in the United States and in more than 120 countries worldwide daily over the Internet. For more information about the Law Hour and Editorial Review, please visit our webpage at georgegordon.org. Again, that's georgegordon.org. Now, the Law Hour and Editorial Review brings you important information about law, science, education, politics, religion, health, history, economics, news, and current events. So stay tuned for tonight's special report on fluoridation when we come back. Hey, let me ask you this. What do you think's wrong with the Ten Commandments? Because it's pretty obvious that something is wrong with the Ten Commandments because they've been banned from our public schools. They're banned from our public institutions. And they're now banned from our national consciousness. Instead of these 10 simple, time-tested laws, we now see the 10 planks to the Communist Manifesto in their place. And they're teaching these 10 planks to the Communist Manifesto in our public schools, our public institutions. And we've made them a part of our national consciousness. You know, this is a pretty radical change in our political and moral outlook over the past 50 years, don't you think? Are you aware, for instance, that your daughter couldn't receive an aspirin in your public school without your consent, but your daughter can have an abortion arranged through that same public school nurse without even your knowledge, much less your consent? That's why I contend that the solution to this kind of moral perversion and national insanity is to go back to what worked. Let's go back to the Ten Commandments and the Mosaic Law. No, our founding fathers practiced and advocated the Ten Commandments. They even put 22 principles of that law into our federal constitution. And there's still at least one school left in America that teaches this entire Mosaic Law, the Ten Commandments, and all 759 statutes, judgments, and commandments, as well as the penalties and the 33 benefits that we all receive for their observance. Now, you know, every law has a penalty. And we don't have to know what the penalty to the law is to suffer from its effect. So whether we call this the Mosaic Law, or the Law of God, or the Common Law, or Natural Law, or Karma, or something else, it's automatic and it works just like AIDS, herpes, and VD, which just happen to be the natural penalties for adultery. Now, if you'd like more information, why don't you call and order our free General Law CD package first? That's the place to start. It's a four-hour commentary on the law in general. And it's educational, it's informative, and it's entertaining. And it's free of charge. And you can call and order one right now. The number is 417-273-4967. Once more, that's area code 417-273-4967. If you're online, you can go to our website, georgegordon.org, georgegordon.org. Then click on to our archives page, and I think that's where I was told you'll find the General Law CD package is on that archives page. Now, if you can't find it on georgegordon.org, go to georgegordon.com, and I think you'll find it there. You can stream it or you can download it. All right, we're talking about fluoridation. Last time I gave you a who's who, the history of it and where it got started. It's pretty bad stuff, so without getting into the chemistry of what it all does to your body, we hit the highlights of it, causes cancer. Fluoride causes, directly or indirectly, about 50,000 deaths a year. This has been going on now since about 1960. By 1970, nearly all the metropolitan water supplies had been fluoridated. Now they've been working on little towns. I mean, they're working on little hamlets all over America to get fluoride into the water. But if we just went back to 1960, and we've been at this for about 50 years, if you take 50 years times 50,000 a year, that's 2.5 million people dead from fluoride. Now, this fluoride is a deadly toxic poison. Alcoa, it is believed, the biggest aluminum company in America, is believed responsible for making the statement that fluoride in the drinking water in America saves the economy $2 billion a year. Not exactly clear how it saves $2 billion a year unless it's in the disposal of the fluoride. It's so toxic, you can't use it in pesticides. It's banned from pesticides. 10 parts per million is so toxic that it shows up in people's health rather rapidly. So they had to reduce it to 1 part per million. And at 1 part per million, it causes health problems at the range that we're discussing here, 50,000 deaths a year. Now, nobody has a death certificate that says killed by fluoride. That's what makes this process such a genius at work. Can't blame it on fluoride. You don't know that. It's kind of like the tobacco industry, if you all remember back in the 60s and 70s. Said there's no empirical evidence that smoking causes cancer. And yet the internal memos within the tobacco industry that they were writing back and forth to one another to say, hey, we've got to shut this up, because if it ever gets out that smoking causes cancer and people start to understand that, you know, they'll not only quit smoking, they'll start suing the tobacco industry, which is ultimately what happened. It got to a point where they couldn't cover it up anymore, so that's why you had the tobacco agreement, you know, this tobacco settlement. And the tobacco company said, okay, well, we'll pay you X number of billions of dollars over 30 years. That's when cigarettes were about 50 cents a pack. Well, now they're pushing $5 a pack. So all that meant was for the tobacco industry was a hell of a big payday. It was a rape, rob, and pillaging of Americans again. See, I used to smoke, so I'm with you people out there that smoke. See, when you smoke, you become addicted. You're addicted to the nicotine. That's why you can't quit. You have an addiction. That's why people, when they get on drugs, you know, like heroin, cocaine, so on, they can't quit. They're addicted. That's the objective behind this. Get you addicted. Then once you're addicted to this, then you're going to keep using the stuff no matter what. So they get you addicted to this tobacco. They get you addicted, you know, to the nicotine. And then as time progresses along, they lie to you over all the years, because you don't want to believe that smoking causes cancer anyway. And you want to believe what you want to believe, and you want to hear what you want to believe. So the tobacco companies told you what you wanted to hear. And so this went on for many, many years. Now, of course, there's always enemies of everything, you know, like fluoride. See, ultimately the truth about fluoride will come out, the truth about cancer will come out, the truth about the March of Dimes, the truth about the Lusitania, Pearl Harbor. I mean, all this comes out over time. But by the time it comes out, the people who were involved in it, that it meant something to, are all dead and buried. That's the trick. That's why you... on this bailout that's going on now. See, much of this bailout that's going on with our banks and so on, that's being hidden from you under national security concerns. Top secret. So they stamp top secret on there so you can't see it. Now, the fluoride muddles your brain. So if you're wondering why the American people are unable to generate any righteous indignation, education, media, and fluoride. You know, you put those three together, you've got the perfect combination for mind control. So the people who are in the know don't drink fluoridated water. And in fact, they avoid fluoride in any way possible. Now, none of us are going to avoid it totally, because it's in the environment. It's in everything that we do. It's in everything we drink and eat. And you're drinking Coca-Cola over there. Where in the hell did you think the Coca-Cola bottling company got the water to put in that can? Did you think that they brought in imported water from Switzerland? I mean, come on, guys. Let's wake up and smell the coffee here. So we're being dosed with this stuff whether we like it or not. Now, there's a modality for getting this out of your body. There's a modality for doing it. And so why don't you go to your local health food store and start picking up some books on fluoride and how to get it out of your body, chelation, charcoal, and so on. I mean, I'm not going to sit here and preach a sermon and say, my God, brother, you've got to get this fluoride out of your body. And I kind of breathe heavy. Because I don't give a rat's ass whether you've got fluoride in you or not. The hell is that to me? Now, I just want to be perfectly selfish and honest with you. You know, it's no skin off my back one way or the other. As a reporter, though, I like a good story. And this fluoride is a good story. I've put it on a time or two. And when I saw it here, a chapter here in Murder by Injection, I just couldn't contain myself. I said, hey, this is a hell of a story, especially with Eustace Mullins writing, because he goes back in the Who's Who books, you know, for years and years. First of all, he's an old fart like I am, and he goes back, you know, I don't know, 80, 90 years. That guy, if he's still alive, he's got to be in his 90s. Hell, he was an old man when I met him 20 years ago. You know, that was when, you know, when I wasn't a senior citizen yet. And he goes back in Who's Who, and he drags out all the dead bodies, you know, from years past, and identifies who it was that was doing what to who, and how this process and program got going, and who it benefits. And this old Dan Rather used to say, you know, follow the money. Dan Rather was a part and parcel of the cartel, but he had a good line there when he said, hey, just follow the money. Now, the last time we were talking about the Federal Reserve Board protects the interests of the rich. And that's precisely what they're doing. The rich are the people, you know, that are getting the bailouts. Like the other day, the Bank of America passed out, oh, hell, it was $3.3 billion of these obscene bonuses, you know, to their top staff, the insiders. Well, where in the hell did the $3.3 billion came from? Well, it came out of the $45 billion of taxpayer money. Well, who in the hell caused this economic meltdown? Well, Bank of America was one of the culprits that caused it. So not only do they cause this abortion, then they get paid for it. Isn't that just special? Now, Eustace Mullins is pointing this out, that the people who have caused all this death and heartache and destruction that's going on here with the fluoride, and we haven't got to the gruesome part yet. I'm going to give you the gruesome part in this second program here on fluoridation. The first time around, he's naming the who's who's that's doing it to you. Now, these last 8 or 10 pages here, we're going to take a look at what does this stuff do, and what about other heavy metals, you know, like aluminum, Alzheimer's disease. I mean, we've got some god-awful, destructive, degenerative diseases that we never heard of before. Now, I want to point out to you that God himself told us that he was going to lay diseases upon us that we had never heard of before. So, if you want to know who's actually behind the scenes orchestrating this, it's the Creator himself. We, that's you and I, have set ourselves up for this great tribulation, this great end time destruction, which Jesus said in Matthew 24, never before and never again a destruction like this. This thing's going to rank right up there with Noah's flood. In fact, the Messiah said that it would be worse than Noah's flood. Now, I don't know exactly how that's going to come down, but he said it's going to be worse than Noah's flood in Matthew 24. All right, now, the Federal Reserve Board protects the interests of the rich, and no one has yet challenged that statement. Greenspan, remember he was our illustrious Federal Reserve chairman here, Greenspan is also a director of the giant media conglomerate Capital Cities ABC Network, as well as being a trustee of the reputedly right-wing think tank Hoover Institution, which furnished the powerhouse behind the Reagan Revolution, and which is dominated by the Trotskyite League for Industrial Democracy, a Rockefeller-funded agitprop group. The vice chairman of Alcoa is Forrest Shumway, who is also a director of Transamerica, Ampex Corporation, Garrett Corporation, Mack Trucks, the Wix Companies, Gold West Broadcasters, United California Bank, and Notamas, a heady mix of banking interests, heavy industry, and media holdings, which is very typical of the monopolists today. They have found that the best modus operandi is to control the media, banking, and defense industries in a giant combine. Now, other directors of Alcoa are Paul H. O'Neill. Now, remember, Paul O'Neill later became the Secretary of the Treasury under George Bush in his first administration, who is also a member of the influential Board of Visitors at Harvard University, president of International Paper, and director of the National Westminster Bank, one of England's Big Five. O'Neill was chief of human resources for the U.S. government from 1971 to 77. Paul H. Miller, senior advisor to the prestigious First Boston Investment Group, director of Celanese Corporation, Cummings Engine, Congolium Corporation, Siemens Bank for Savings, New York, and Ogilvy and Mather Incorporated, one of the nation's leading advertising firms. Franklin H. Thomas, he's the token black, who was U.S. Attorney for New York and then was named head of the Ford Foundation. He is also a director of Citicorp, Citibank, Allied Stores, Cummings Engine, Sir R.V. Parbow, an Australian tycoon, who is chairman of the Western Mining Company. He's also director of Zurich Insurance, the second largest firm in Switzerland, Munich Reinsurance, and Chase Manhattan Bank. Nathan Pearson, who for many years has been the financial guardian of the Mellon family, handling their major investments. John P. Diesel, president of the giant conglomerate Tenneco. He's also a director of USSR Trade and Economic Council, along with Armand Hammer, and director of First City Bank Corp., one of the three Rothschild banks in the United States. John D. Harper, director of Peribus, New York, Metropolitan Life, and chairman of Koch Enterprises and other fuel companies. John A. Mayer, director of H.J. Hines Company, the Mellon Bank, and Norfolk and Western Railway. His son, John Jr., is general manager of the Morgan Stanley Bankers in England and vice president of Morgan Guarantee International. Now, as we can see here, that the origin of the sodium fluoride controversy stems from close allies of the Chase Manhattan banks and other Rockefeller interests. Now, why would they want to do this? Well, because they have a world government. They've got this agenda. They've got a plan that they're putting into play here. Now, it just so happens that this grand plan fits into Bible prophecy, and it's called in the Bible Jacob's Trouble. It's known as the Great Tribulation. That's what the Messiah calls it. He said, "And then in those days there shall be great tribulation." Now, tribulation translates into war, famine, disease, plague, the kinds of things that you see in Revelation chapter 6 in the four horsemen of the Revelation. So, we're either in it, or we're right on the cusp of it. I don't know quite where we're at. I'm not a prophet. I don't have any inside track. God doesn't call me up, you know, and say, hey, Gordon, let me give you today's latest tips. All I know is what old Will Rogers used to say. All I know is what I read in the papers. All I know is what I read in the scripture, just like all the rest of you. But when we put together these events, along with a book like this one here, Murder by Injection, The Story of the Medical Conspiracy Against America, it opens our brains up and we say, oh my God, look what's going on here. I didn't know this before. Now, fortunately, Eustace Mullins, an old man now, an old hen, an old political maverick, he's been around for long enough that he can go back in time, you know, in time 20 years older than I am, takes him back, you know, as a young man when I was born. So he started, you know, the day I was born, it took me 20 years to learn something. Then I was stupid for the next 30, assuming Mullins was in the same modality. He's about 20 years ahead of all the rest of us. 20 years ahead. And then in addition to that, he's a journalist. He's a researcher. And he's got his fingers on the pulse of what's going on. And he's written 10 books. And this one here just happens to be one of his Cracker Jack books. And I picked it up back in the 80s. I've reported on the book itself as a whole. But I never took the time to take each chapter. That's what I thought I'd do here, you know, like the cancer story I showed you the other day. This cancer thing, you know, they get you all pumped up and they want to get you out there marching for cancer and one thing and another. Hell, I don't spend my time marching on cancer. I already know the outcome to that story. And there isn't going to be any cures to cancer. And in addition to that, you already got 13. What the hell are you going to do with another one or two or three? That's just a part of the ruse. That keeps your mind off of the real issue. And the real issue is, well, what the hell's causing all this cancer? Allopathic medicine. That's what's caused the cancer. Hell, before allopathic medicine, we didn't have cancer. It's kind of like the other day we were sitting here watching the telly, and I think it was on Dateline Sunday night, and they had a story on autism. And when they got through with their hour special, they came up with the predictable result. And that predictable result was vaccinations do not cause autism. Well, what in the hell did you expect NBC to come up with? NBC is a Rockefeller company. ABC, CBS. I mean, hell, we're talking about the insiders here. Did you think that they were going to tell on themselves? So I thought I'd throw this one out for you. I was sitting there at the table with the wife, and she took the time to watch it. I wanted to, but I was tied up, and I couldn't watch it. But she gave me a report. We were sitting there at the table, and she said, hey, did you know that NBC on Dateline came to the conclusion with all their scientists and one thing or another that vaccinations don't cause autism? So I said, well, that's pretty predictable. I wouldn't expect the medical trust to say, well, autism is caused by vaccination. Although you can't sue the manufacturing companies. Can you imagine what an outcry that would create? Because one kid in 67 now has autism in this country. One out of 67. So I said, well, I'll tell you what I'd do. Just as an old farmer, here's what my conclusion is. I would go out and I would find 100 children at random who have autism. You know, there's 50 states in the union. So you need a couple from California and you need a couple of three, you know, from New York and two or three from... Just go around the country and just pull out two or three kids at random from all over the country and just ask this question. Of the children who have autism, how many of those, just taken at random now, how many of those have been vaccinated? And I'll bet you that the answer is going to be 100%. I'm just throwing that out there for you, boys and girls. Just think about it for a minute. Because that's what a doctor by the name of Clark came up with back in 1909. He said that he had in his in his medical career treated 200 cancer patients. Now remember, cancer in 1900 was only one person out of 33 was going to get cancer in his lifetime. And this Dr. Clark had seen 200 in his medical career, 200 documented cases, and he said he had never seen a case of cancer in an unvaccinated person. So I'm just going to use Clark's modality here. So now, after you have, at random, just gone out and taken a look at 100 children nationwide, I think you're going to find that all 100 of them have been vaccinated. Oven by itself, done, proved, thing. Now go out, and you're going to have to look a little harder now and find another 100 children that do not have autism. Say, just 100 children anywhere who have not been vaccinated. See if you can find two children in California that have not been vaccinated. See if you can find two in New York and two in Florida and two in North Dakota and so on. Just go all over the country and take a look at those 100 unvaccinated children. And I think you'll find that not one of those has autism. Check them out real careful. And I'll just bet you that you won't find a single one with autism. Now, oven by itself, that probably won't tell you a hell of a lot, but it's, we're getting closer now, aren't we? I mean, you know, that won't tell anything to a doctor or a pharmacist or to somebody with a college degree, but to, you know, us average Joe Sixpack farmers, truck drivers, and carpenters out here, if you could take a look at 100 children with autism and every one of them is vaccinated, and take a look at 100 children that are not vaccinated, and not a one of them has autism, I think that would tell us quite a bit. That's just common sense. Now, let's put the cap on the bottle here. Now, let's just go around the world, and let's take a look at people in the Amazon jungle, people who have not been vaccinated. And then let's go over to Nepal, Botswana land. You know, let's just take a look all around the world. Go to some remote backwater country, you know, in Azerbaijan or someplace out in western China, where people do not practice vaccination. And just look at the population and ask the question, all right, how many of you people here, what percentage of the population has autism? And you know what my bet's going to be? I don't think you're going to find it there. And that's because we didn't have autism in the United States of America until we had vaccination, compulsory vaccination of children in 1932. Because in 1930, there were zero cases in the United States, and the first cases showed up about 1940, 41, 42, along in there. And a doctor in 1943 hung a label on it. He called it autism. You know, now that tells you something, doesn't it? Now, I'm not a paid professional, and I never went to medical school, but by God, I ain't brain dead, and I ain't drinking fluoride. And I think that if you did that, I think that'd tell you something. Now, that isn't going to persuade anybody, and I'm not here to persuade you that this is what you ought to do to prevent autism in your child, because I don't care if your kid gets autism. I'm not concerned about your kid at all. I was concerned about my children, and I was damn careful with mine. But, you know, you're an adult. I presume if you're listening to my program, by God, you're an adult, and you're smart enough to think for yourself, and you probably have a degree after your name. Now, if you're not able to think and you're not able to use your head, that's your problem in life, not mine. Now, if you don't care, you know, just do what you're doing. If you do care and you don't want your kid to get autism, then I would suggest that you take a look at it and start thinking for a change. Start leading yourself instead of following these paid scientists and politicians and preachers. These paid professionals, instead of following after your leaders over here, start thinking for yourself, and why don't you start leading yourself? Now, there's a thing here called autism, so I think we ought to take a look at it. Let's take a look at our break first, and then we'll take a look at this autism thing. Autism and Alzheimer's. But meanwhile, you're listening to The Law Hour, an editorial review. We're sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. Now, The Law Hour is heard 7 days a week here in the United States, and we're heard around the world in more than 120 countries daily over the Internet and radio. Now, if you'd like more information about The Law School and The Law Hour, please go to our website at georgegordon.org, georgegordon.org. Now, the law school teaches family law, tax law, courtroom strategy and procedure, business law, agricultural law, civil rights, and biblical law from the scriptural perspective. Now, that's 8 schools in all. The law school is a private, non-commercial, non-profit, non-sectarian law school that is open to individuals, but by prearrangement. The law school conducts a homeschooling program for adults and compact desk, and the Law Hour website is updated weekly, and it has our radio log schedule and archives. All of that can be accessed through our website at georgegordon.org. Now, all of these Law Hour programs are archived on the Internet by title and date for your listening convenience, and the Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. Now, the law school offers a free 4-hour introductory CD package. Be sure to order yours by calling the law school and asking for it. The number is 417-273-4967. Again, that's area code 417-273-4967. Now, you can also pick up our general law CD package off the Internet directly from our website at georgegordon.org, and then go to our archives page. Or, if that doesn't work, go to georgegordon.com and go to our archives page and then download it. All right, now, these sources of information that we use on this program are true, accurate, and correct to the best of our knowledge and belief. And the Law Hour and Editorial Review gives credit to those authors and publications that we use on this program, and we often endorse or recommend books, papers, periodicals, newsletters to our listeners. Now, these endorsements, these recommendations that we give, don't mean that the authors or publications that we're endorsing are necessarily going to reciprocate. Keep in mind that most of these authors and publications that we cite here on the Law Hour and Editorial Review may be hostile, political, religious, economic, sectarian, racial, or ethnic partisans, and their viewpoints may not be totally endorsed by the Law Hour and Editorial Review. These opinions, beliefs, comments, views, and expressions that you hear on this program are mine and mine alone, and they don't necessarily represent the views, beliefs, or the opinions of the advertisers, sponsors, management, or staff of this radio network or of this local radio station. Now, if you'd like more information about the Law Hour and Editorial Review, then please go to our website at georgegordon.org, or you can call us direct at 417-273-4967. We are reviewing the book on murder by injection. I'm on chapter 5 in it. Yep, fluoridation chapter 5, and we're getting the skinny here on this fluoridation. Now, you've probably heard that there's a controversy over it. The Mullins ties this in with the Rockefeller Institute. The Rockefeller interests, along with the media, government, heavy industry, banking, they've got an agenda. They're working on it diligently. Fluoridation is a part of the agenda. And if you want to drop out of the program, well, then stop drinking fluoridated water. If you are happy and satisfied with the program, drink more fluoridated water. Brush your teeth with fluoridated toothpaste. And instead of swallowing 10% of the toothpaste, if you want bigger and bigger doses of fluoride, hell, why don't you brush your teeth and swallow all of it so that you can get all the fluoride? If you think fluoride is so good for you, why don't you double dose and triple dose and take more of it? You know, just get right after it. Hell, if a little bit's good, a whole lot's got to be better. doesn't it? Now, keep in mind that 535 members of Congress have special bottled water brought in at taxpayer expense to protect them from fluoride. You're paying for that. Seems like to me, if pure water is good for your senator, by God, pure water ought to be good for you. That's what my common sense tells me. So I'm going to do what my senator does, Kit Bond. He drinks good water, clear, pure water without fluoride. So I think that's what I'm going to do. Now, we can see that the origin of the sodium fluoride controversy stems from the close allies of the Chase Manhattan Bank and the other Rockefeller interests. The operation of the Aluminum Trust has given rise to a new epidemic in the United States. 2.5 million Americans are currently afflicted with a strange, incurable disease called Alzheimer's disease. Its victims now require more than $50 billion worth of medical care a year. $50 billion a year. Now remember, cancer is a $500 billion industry. And Alzheimer's is now a $50 billion, about 10% of that. But Alzheimer's is growing rapidly. This is a great boon to the medical industry. Alzheimer's. And the prognosis always grows darker. Due to the progressive nature of the illness, it strikes the neurotransmitters of the brain, which, as has already been noted, are adversely affected by fluoride. However, the principal agent seems to be the accumulation of aluminum deposits on the principal nerves of the brain. About 70% of the cost of this illness is borne by the families of the afflicted because most Medicare and private health insurance programs refuse to pay for it. The medical monopoly has been frantically trying to find some other agent in this disease, spending millions to study such factors as genetic predisposition, slow virus, environmental toxins, and immunologic changes, despite the fact that its origins have been traced to the large amounts of aluminum which most Americans began ingesting with their food since the 1920s. Alzheimer's disease is now causing more than 100,000 deaths a year and is the fourth leading cause of adult death in the United States. And yet, significantly, there has been no national foundation such as the American Cancer Society or the Arthritis Foundation to investigate its causes because the medical monopoly already knows the answer. Alzheimer's growing incidence was at first dismissed as growing old. Later, it was diagnosed as premature senility. It often strikes in the mid-50s. These were the men and women who had grown up in America during the 20s, a period when the traditional cast iron and earthenware cooking vessels were almost universally replaced by the more modern and seemingly more convenient aluminum cookware. The present writer's parents both grew up on farms in rural areas of Virginia. Their food, almost entirely homegrown, was prepared in iron pots over wood-fueled cookstoves. Those Americans born after 1920 had their food prepared in aluminum pots, which were usually heated over gas flames, later electric. This writer's mother often remarked that food cooked over gas flame never tasted like food cooked over wood fire. The reason is that the combustion of poisonous fuel inevitably releases some toxins into the air and into the food. Electric heat is also said to materially affect food because of the electric vibrations given off by the heat. By the 1930s, American housewives had learned that it was potentially dangerous to leave many foods in aluminum pots for more than a few minutes. Greens, tomatoes, and other vegetables were known to discolor and become poisonous in a short time. Tomatoes could actually pit and corrode the interior of the aluminum pots in a short time. many foods turned the pots black. Strangely enough, no one took these obvious warning signs as an indication that cooking food in aluminum pots, even for a few minutes, might produce unfortunate results. It is now known that cooking any food in an aluminum pot, particularly with fluoridated water, quickly forms a highly poisonous compound. Dr. McGugan's testimony in a famous court hearing on aluminum effects, the Royal Baking Powder case, revealed that extensive research had shown that boiling water in aluminum pots produced hydroxide poisons. Boiling vegetables in aluminum also produced a hydroxide poison. Boiling an egg in aluminum produced a phosphate poison. Boiling meat in an aluminum pot produced a chloride poison. Any food cooked in aluminum containers would neutralize the digestive juices, produce acidosis and ulcers. Perhaps the use of aluminum pots produced the widespread indigestion in America, which then necessitated the ingesting of large amounts of antacids containing even more aluminum. Now, after consuming food cooked in aluminum pots over a period from 20 to 40 years, many Americans began to experience serious memory loss. Their mental capacities then deteriorated rapidly until they were totally unable to fend for themselves or to recognize their spouses of many years. It was then found that concentrations of aluminum in certain areas of the brain had caused permanent deterioration of brain cells and nerve connections. The damage was not only incurable, it was also progressive and not responsive to any known treatment. This epidemic was soon known as Alzheimer's disease. 7% of all Americans over 65 have now been diagnosed as having this disease. Many others have not been diagnosed. They're simply dismissed as senile, incompetent, or mentally ill. Now, Dr. Michael Weiner and other physicians have found that the epidemic has been caused not only by the aluminum cookware, but by the daily increasing ingestion of aluminum from many products and common household usage. The insatiable marketers of aluminum have annually expanded its use in many products, whose consumers have no idea that they are ingesting any type of aluminum. Women's douches now contain solutions of aluminum, which introduces it directly into your body. The most widely used painkillers, such as buffered aspirin, contain impressive quantities of aluminum. Ascription AD, Rohrer, has 44 milligrams of aluminum per tablet. Kama, Dorsey, has 44 milligrams of aluminum per tablet. However, the largest single source of aluminum occurs with the daily ingestion of widely prescribed and non-prescription antacid products for stomach upsets. Amphagel from Wythe Pharmaceutical has 174 milligrams per dose of aluminum hydroxide. Alternagel Stewart Pharmaceutical has 174 milligrams of aluminum hydroxide per dose. Delcid Merrill National, 174 milligrams of aluminum per dose. Estamil Riker, 265 milligrams of aluminum per dose. Mylanta Stewart, 116 milligrams of aluminum per dose. Now, a study of current victims of Alzheimer's would probably find that most of them, on their physician's advice, had been ingesting large amounts of these antacids daily for many years. Non-prescription antidiarrheal drugs also contain significant amounts of aluminum. Esalid Central has 370 milligrams of aluminum salts per milliliter. Kaopectate concentrate from Upjohn Laboratories has 290 milligrams of aluminum per milliliter. Aluminum ammonium sulfate is widely used as a buffer and a neutralizing agent by manufacturers of cereals and baking powder. Aluminum potassium sulfate, known as aluminum flour or aluminum meal, is widely used in baking powder and clarifying sugar. The annual use of sodium aluminum phosphate has now reached the amount of 19 million kilograms per year. It is used in large amounts in cake mixes, frozen dough, self-rising flour, and processed foods. In an average amount per product of from 3 to 3.5%, some 300,000 kilograms of sodium aluminum sulfates are used in household baking powders every year, averaging from 21 to 26% of the bulk of these products. Aluminum wrap is now everywhere. Toothpaste is packaged in tubes lined with aluminum. There are aluminum seals on many food and drink products, and soft drinks everywhere are now packaged in aluminum cans. While the amount of aluminum ingested on any given day from all of these sources may be infinitesimal, maybe it only amounts to one part per million, like fluoride. But this parade of products coated with or mixed with aluminum available on a daily basis is frightening. Its effects are the equivalent to that of a slow virus. As the metal accumulates at vital points in your body, particularly in your brain, thus the number of Alzheimer's victims is probably outnumbered by the number of potential victims who will later be afflicted with this same terrible symptoms. So, solution. You know, you got a problem. You need to identify the cause of that problem, don't you? Now, once we have identified the problem and the cause of the problem, then it becomes easier to solve it. And it would seem like to me that common sense would dictate that prevention is worth a pound of cure. Here in the law school, I always start my students off by telling them that you can prevent a whole lot more problem than you can fix after the fact. You can stay out of more trouble than you can get out of. You can stay out of more trouble than you can get out of. So, when I take a look at the problem, my common sense says to me that I don't want baked goods and baking powders and things like that that are laced with aluminum. So, the other day, we happened to be over at Tim and Jim's, and there was a shipment came in, and we noticed that there was a brand of baking powder down there. And it very conspicuously on the label says, no aluminum added. So I bought several cases of it, and I put it on my shelf so that when we bake here in the Gordon household, we do not put in aluminum in our baking powder. Now you might say, well, that's a small step forward. That's right, it's a small step forward, but it's a step forward. Now, we're not any of us going to eliminate aluminum 100%. But you can't buy an aluminum pot anymore. I mean, we're all smart enough now. We all learned that aluminum pot trick, didn't we? Now, look, the Rockefeller interest, they want us to ingest aluminum. So they gave us aluminum pots. Well, that didn't work. So now they put it in your baking powder. So now they put your soda pop in an aluminum can. Now, first of all, soda pop isn't good for you to start with. And that's because of the sugar content. But in addition to that, it's the aluminum can. So when I buy something, I don't buy anything in an aluminum can. So if it's in an aluminum can, even if it's otherwise good, I don't buy it. Okay, so now that solves that problem. And that's because you take Coca-Cola, for instance. That Coke now, it leaches. And I've never done this, but I've heard said that if you put a nail in a can of Coke or in a glass with Coke, it'll dissolve the nail. Well, hydrochloric acid in your stomach, you know, dissolves the food that you eat. It doesn't dissolve you, doesn't dissolve your stomach. So the fact that Coca-Cola dissolves the nail doesn't mean that Coca-Cola isn't fit to drink. Coca-Cola actually is a medicine. If you've got gallstones, you need Coca-Cola, lemon juice, and olive oil to dissolve the gallstones. Coca-Cola's got some use. It's hell, I've got a lot of Coca-Cola stocked. I don't drink the crap very often, but once in a while, you know, I run it through my system to meld out the gallstones. So there's ways, you know, that you can use things for medicinal purposes. For instance, I buy Coca-Cola in glass bottles. That's all. Just buy it in a glass bottle. Now, I don't like plastics because plastics contain chemicals. And so if I've got a choice, I buy it in cans, and I like the new cans that are lined so that the acids in the food don't eat through the cans. I like glass bottles and jars, so I buy things that are in glass bottles and jars, try to avoid aluminum altogether. Now, once in a while, you might need to buy something that's in aluminum. And if that's the case, well, then fine. You want to keep aluminum consumption and fluoride consumption down to a bare minimum. So we live a lifestyle in which we don't expose ourselves to it. Be conscious of it, and then avoid it. When you want to buy a soda pop and there's a glass bottle, or there's a can, or there's a plastic bottle and an aluminum can, what do you want to choose? Well, I'd choose the glass bottle number one, the plastic bottle number two, and the aluminum can number three. And if you live your life like that, you're just avoiding a little more of the trouble. Now, if you get in the habit of taking activated charcoal. Now, here's a little story. It was first tested in 1806 by a French chemist. He took 3 grams of arsenic, followed by massive doses of activated charcoal with no ill effects. Now, don't you do that, but this French chemist did that to test. Now, I'm sure he'd been practicing laboratory animals before he did it on himself, but moral to the story is activated charcoal absorbs toxins. So if you get in the habit of taking activated charcoal, it not only will clean out the toxins in your stomach and your gut, it will clear the toxins, the heavy metals, out of your joints and your body. Isn't that just special? Now, we run our Jack Daniel's whiskey through activated charcoal. And it's a natural detoxifier. And it's also an agent that will clear your body out. And so, why don't you pick up a book or two on activated charcoal and educate yourself. Don't believe me because I tell you this. That's like following after your new guru. You know, people will oftentimes do that. They're dissatisfied with their government masters, so they want George Gordon to take over and be their new master. I try to tell people pretty plainly, I say, hey, listen, I'm not going to be your new guardian here. Why don't you start thinking for yourself? Why don't you get busy and start using your own head and lead yourself for a change? So go to the health food store and see what you can dig out on this thing of activated charcoal. I think you're going to be amazed. I think you're going to be surprised, and pleasantly so. Now, where there's a problem, there's a solution. Avoiding it, I think, is number one, but then what do you do to get rid of it? What do you do to get it out? Now, there's a number of books that have been written. There are herbs that we use. There are agents like charcoal and silver, colloidal silver. So there are, in addition to drugs and cut, burn, and poison, you know, there are other solutions to health problems. 32 oils, essential oils, are mentioned in the Bible. There are more than 140 essential oils. These essential oils also take these toxins out of your body. I mean, by rubbing it on your skin, the oils will absorb the toxins. And then your natural bodily processes through perspiration and elimination will dispose of those toxins. Not talking about a drug from Upjohn now. I'm talking about essential oils from the Bible. I'm talking about all foods and herbs and plants have oil in them. And those oils do various things. Those are natural healers. They've got natural substances, vitamins and minerals, enzymes, all kinds of compounds that your body needs and uses. Now, normally we get them in our foods, but by the time these foods have been refined and processed and cooked and boiled, you don't have those natural nutrients available. Now what do? Well, we suffer from all kinds of diseases, especially the degenerative diseases. And you know, the crazy part of it is we're doing it to ourselves. I mean, boys and girls, hey, listen. You go to the store and you're buying a tube of toothpaste with added fluoride. I mean, hell, you're doing it to yourself now. Now, I will concede that probably most of you are sitting there saying, well, I didn't know. Oh, gosh, I didn't know. Hell, all those 3.5 million people with Alzheimer's didn't know. Now, what in the hell did it do for them? It's not only time for you to wake up and know, it's time for you to wake up and do something instructive and constructive for yourself. And so I'm not going to be the guy that's going to educate you. I'm not your guardian here. Don't want to be. But there are sources of information. Now, the first place that I would suggest that you go is to the book Murder by Injection by Eustace Mullins. I'm only going to cover, you know, the highlights of various aspects of it. You can take a look at it and cover it in greater detail. Then from that, he cited a number of other sources in the book that he got the information from. Go to those books and get a greater understanding of the problem, the cause, and the solution. Then go to your local health food store and say, hey, listen, I got fluoride and aluminum in my body. I want to get it out. What books do you recommend? And they'll point to the books like Mendelsohn's books and so on and say, hey, right here. I've cited several of them here in this book, Murder by Injection. And then you'll be able to educate yourself and you'll be able to do something constructive and instructive for yourself. And then you'll know that what you're doing is for you. You're not following me. You're not following somebody else. Do it for yourself. All right. Now, remember, the book is available through BraveNewBookstore.com. Simple enough, right on the Internet. Go to BraveNewBookstore.com, and then they can get the book for you. Murder by Injection, The Story of the Medical Conspiracy Against America by Eustace Mullins. Hey, I'm out of time again here, children. We're going to have to leave it right there and remind you that you've been listening to the Law Hour and Editorial Review, and we're sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. The Law Hour is heard 7 days a week here in the United States, and we're heard around the world in more than 120 countries daily over the Internet and radio. If you'd like more information about the Law School and the Law Hour, then we invite you to go to our website, georgegordon.org. The Law School is a private, non-commercial, non-profit, non-sectarian law school, and it is open to individuals but by prearrangement. The Law School conducts a homeschooling program for adults on compact disc, and the Law Hour website is updated every week, and it has our radio log schedule and archives. All of these Law Hour programs are archived on the Internet by title and date for your listening convenience, and the Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. Time's up. Got to leave it right there. We'll see you back here tomorrow night. Same time, same station, God willing, of course. So until then, thanks for listening, everybody, and good night, friends.